about generally the cost of living, and yet at the same time, for those on over 150,000 a year, they're going to get much better off as a result of this.
The PM has pledged her government will keep an iron grip on national finances as part of her commitment to sound money. The subtext: looming cuts to already struggling public services.
They always say that we've got to pay the price for their problems. They created these problems. They create the wars, they create the shortages, and then workers are meant to pay for that and divide ourselves amongst each other. We're not going to have that.
But Liz Truss and Finance Minister Kwasi Kwarteng say they're determined to hold their nerve, promising a medium-term fiscal plan and independent analysis. Not now, but in November. As Birmingham hosts the conference, the Welsh and Scottish administrations have demanded a crisis summit, while the Labour Party, now with a 33-point lead in the polls, says a government appointed solely by party members has no mandate.
The UK is in a financial crisis. Protests such as this one are drawing more and more people onto the streets nationwide, meaning the pressure on this government to deliver beyond the conference walls is reaching boiling point.
Liz Truss has never had a problem charming the party faithful, but it won't be just her allies watching. Grassroots pressure is rising. Change is on the horizon. Saidpur is up, Birmingham.
Afghanistan is still reeling from Friday's bomb attack in a Shia neighborhood in Kabul that left dozens of people dead and scores of others wounded. One of the victims of the attack was 18-year-old Najiba, whose family is grieving her loss. Najiba's father says he had raised his daughter with great difficulties, but lost her in the blink of an eye.
I've had a great passion in educating my children. I'm illiterate, but love to see my children educated. However, I'm an ordinary worker, but I always supported them throughout their school with everything they needed. My daughter, Najiba, was so smart and intelligent. I was proud of her and loved her so much. I feel heartbroken that I'm not seeing her future and I've lost her forever.
Sakina Surosh, Najiba's sister and a social activist, says that systematic attacks on Shia mosques and schools must end. She calls on the UN to recognize such attacks as massacre.
My demand from the international bodies, especially the UN, is that the latest attack on Khaj Educational Center and other onslaughts on Shia community must be recognized as massacre and Hazara genocide. These attacks are systematically targeting innocent people from a specific ethnic group. The UN should not neglect in this regard and must take practical steps to protect persecuted Hazaras.
Beside international bodies and human rights groups, Afghanistan Shia Clerics Council has called for an investigation into such attacks. The Council called on the global community to end their silence on the murders of Shia Hazaras in Afghanistan.
Afghan clerics strongly condemn the attack on education and innocent students. We seriously call on the Taliban to take urgent and practical actions for ensuring security for all, especially Hazara people. The organizers and financers of such crimes should be brought to justice. The international community must end their silence on the plight of Hazara people in Afghanistan.
Rights groups say the Daesh terrorist group has been responsible for 13 attacks against Hazaras since the Taliban's return to power. The attacks have killed or wounded at least 700 people from the community. The latest bomb attack has shocked people here. They are calling on the international community not to turn a blind eye on the plight of Shia Hazaras in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Palestinians held a mass rally in the blockaded Gaza Strip to support Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds in the face of growing Israeli aggressions against the holy city. People shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and slammed the silence of Arab countries on Israel's crimes in Al-Quds. Tensions have been on the rise in recent weeks as extremist Israeli settlers and Israeli forces desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, which organized the rally, warned the Israeli regime against violations in Al-Quds.
We're sending a clear message to the whole world that the Palestinian resistance and the Palestinian people are in a constant battle against the Israeli enemy and will not remain silent over aggressions against Al-Aqsa.
People from all walks of life gathered to express their support for resistance as the best way to defend Al-Quds against Israeli attacks.
People in Gaza are attending this rally to affirm our support and full backing for the Palestinian resistance. We believe that armed resistance is key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine.
Observers say the international community has failed to help Palestinians in Al-Quds and turned a blind eye to Israeli violations against them. Al-Quds is sacred to all Muslims, and Palestinians consider it as the capital of their future state.
We are here to support Al-Aqsa Mosque because it's part of our faith, and we are willing to sacrifice our lives in order to protect it. Gaza will always defend Al-Quds, and we call on all Arabs and Muslims to protect Al-Quds.
Occupied by Israeli regime forces in 1967, Al-Quds has been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom and justice.
Palestinians say they will use all forms of resistance to protect Al-Aqsa Mosque and the holy city of Al-Quds. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Tehran has hosted the fifth conference in solidarity with the Palestinian children and the youth. The event is held every year on the occasion of the martyrdom of 12-year-old Palestinian Mohammed al-Dur and other martyrs of Palestinian children and the youth. The event highlights the ongoing plight of those born under Israeli occupation and blockade. Human rights groups have long accused the Israeli regime of deliberately targeting Palestinian children. This comes amid the failure of the international community to hold Tel Aviv accountable for its crimes.
All Muslims are duty-bound to fight against the Zionist regime in an effort to maintain peace and stability in the Islamic world and the region, and stand firmly against the expansionism and aggressive policies of Israel.
Mohammed al-Dur was martyred in the Gaza Strip on September 30, 2000. On this, Jamal al-Dur and his 12-year-old son Mohammed were filmed by a Palestinian cameraman as Israeli forces fired bullets at them.
Israeli forces shot dead Mohammed al-Dur in his father's arms, but unfortunately the murderer enjoys support from his Western backers. The regime relieves itself from any responsibility for the support it receives from some governments, communities and international organizations. That's why it exerts organized violence against Palestinian society, especially children and the youth.
Since 2008, the Israeli regime waged three wars on the Gaza Strip, killing and maiming thousands of children. During Israel's 2014 war on Gaza, Israeli forces killed over 2,200 Gazans, including hundreds of children. According to the Palestinian Prisoner Society, the Israeli regime has detained more than 9,000 Palestinian children across the occupied territories over the past 7 years. 19,000 minors, including children younger than 10 years of age, had been arrested since the outbreak of the Second Intifada back in September 2000.
To Palestinians, martyrdom of 12-year-old Mohammed al-Dur has become a symbol of resistance, which Palestinians believe is the only solution to put an end to Israeli aggressions in occupied Palestine. Saman Kujur, Tehran.
The farmers from Pakistan's most significant agriculture province of Punjab have been staging a sit-in since last week. The protest action is against the imposition of agrarian taxes and the increase of electricity tariffs by the government, which they say have badly hit their income.
The farmers who have been protesting since last week in Islamabad's Blue Area are asking the government to waive the taxes recently imposed on tube-well electricity and agriculture fertilizers.
Farmers are the backbone of the country's economy. We are demanding the restoration of the previous tube-well electricity tariff of ₹5.3 per unit and abolishment of all the taxes recently levied, as well as the other adjustments made by the government.
The farmers have warned that they will block off the main roads countrywide if their demands are not accommodated. They are also seeking an end to what they call black marketing of fertilizers and reduction of urea rate, which has risen to 400% in recent days.
The rates of urea and other key agricultural fertilizers have gone up in recent months. We cannot afford costs of harvesting our crops in such conditions. We demand relief funds from the government for the agricultural sector.
The government considers agriculture a provincial subject, so it refrains from addressing farmers' major issues. However, authorities are in contact with the relevant stakeholders to alleviate the farmers' concerns. The devastating floods, which have left more than 1,600 Pakistanis dead and displaced over 33 million people, have added to Pakistan's forex woes, with an estimated economic loss of over $30 billion. Although the International Monetary Fund recently agreed to release over $1.17 billion in funds to Pakistan, the economic situation remains precarious in flood-hit country. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The High School of Human Sciences Leonardo da Vinci is located in central Rome, not far from the Colosseum. The school has a good reputation. It offers a mix of classical and modern studies and a cultural background which, reads its website, allows pupils to access any university faculty. However, earlier this week, one of Leonardo da Vinci's teachers cut a lock of hair from an Iranian student after urging her to express solidarity with the protests taking place in Iran. The underage girl had remained unresponsive to the teacher's request.
We were shocked at the teacher's behavior. He targeted an Iranian minor because of her nationality and made the student feel that expressing solidarity was an act due for her. An act of exclusion from the class was then turned into an act of violence when the teacher humiliated the student by cutting a lock of her hair.
The teacher was addressing his pupils on the issue of protests in Iran that have been going on for days after the tragic death of 22-year-old girl Mahsa Amini. She politely refused to be interviewed, saying that Italy's education authority has forbidden all school staff from engaging with the media on the issue. The teacher involved in the case risks now a disciplinary sanction. Even the mayor of Rome, Roberto Gualtieri, has said the episode concerning the Iranian student, if confirmed, would be an unacceptable form of bullying.
For sure there was violence in the way the teacher behaved. The whole story revolves around someone who has been bullied and their attacker. In between were the other students stunned, petrified, because of the teacher's gesture. They suddenly acted as if they were attendants. They were passive, resigned, a common attitude in our society.
The fact that a teacher, who is someone who should encourage free thinking and the natural reflection of wanting to do something for oneself, I don't know, I think it was absolutely unnecessary, and they should definitely face some consequences.
Also, the National Association of Principals of Rome has condemned the teacher's gesture, saying that teachers should always act with great caution and that principals must ensure that schools are a place of growth and not a place where one looks for media exposure. Max Civili, Rome.
Another black day for the residents of the west of Kabul. Today morning, a bomb hit the Kaj Educational Center in Dasht-e-Barchi area in Shia Hazara neighborhoods. The students were sitting a practice university exam when the explosion went off. The victims of the incident were taken to the hospital. Their relatives report a high number of casualties.
My sister and my cousin were brought here to the emergency hospital. They are now in critical health conditions. They were at the educational center for their exams. As I witnessed, the victims were all innocent people. I saw nearly 60 to 70 people dead and wounded in one individual hospital.
Terrified Muhammad Issa has brought his wounded niece to this hospital. He calls on the Taliban and the global community to do something to help get rid of such attacks.
I saw a lot of people killed or injured. It was very shocking. I visited the educational center. Scores of bodies were laid on the floor. people are terrified. I don't know why there is no end to our suffering. They attack us everywhere. Till when? I call on the global community to do something for the situation of Afghan people, especially Hazaras.
Here, Taliban security officials are visiting the site of the explosion. They say they will take all necessary steps for tightening security for all.
Islamic Emirate is watchful for the security of the people, especially in western Kabul. I promise that everything will come under our control and such incidents won't happen in the future. Such attacks on innocent students are carried out by the enemies of Islam and the people of Afghanistan.
Mosques and educational centers in Shia Hazara neighborhoods in Kabul have been the target of terrorist attacks for years. The Daesh terrorist group have claimed responsibility for most of such attacks. People here in western Kabul say the seemingly endless violence has exhausted them. They want peace, security, and justice. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Today is a day of celebration. We celebrate the start of the imamate of Abu Saleh al-Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance, the 12th infallible successor to the Holy Prophet of Islam and the promised saviour of mankind. Congratulations to all our Muslim listeners on this auspicious occasion.
The Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee, so recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. and placest me in thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household, and make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
It was reported that UK markets lost £500 billion since Liz Truss took over. And then the British pound sunk once again against the dollar as the UK dived deeper into a recession. What is going on with the UK's economy? And is it all the fault of the new UK Prime Minister? That is what we'll be asking our guests in this edition of the program. Our guests joining us for this program are journalist and commentator James Tweedy, who joins us from Plymouth. Also joining us is political and economic analyst Shabir Rizvi, who joins us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. James Tweedy, I have this semi-technical question to maybe ask you, but I figured I'd just come out with a really, really simple question. What is going on with UK's economy under Truss?
Thanks for having me. There's a problem with the economy, and it predates this Truss becoming Prime Minister, and that's the problem, as they call it, the cost of living crisis, which in other words is inflation. Inflation is running at about 10% now, and may rise still, and what that's been caused by the rising prices of natural gas and oil, which is driven by the sanctions on Russia over the its military operation in Ukraine. So, Truss bears responsibility for that because she was foreign secretary at the time the time of the operation started, and she was always one of the leading voices for support for Ukraine and sanctions on Russia. And the Conservative Party everyone knew that that's what she stood for when she was running for leadership of the Conservative Party and to become the new Prime Minister. Her main opponent, Rishi Sunak, it was less certain, but there was people who hoped that he would take a more pragmatic view and ease off on the sanctions. But it's all become kind of irrelevant now because somebody, possibly across the Atlantic, has sabotaged the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines that carry gas from Russia to Germany and other places in Northern Europe.
Okay.
So we're very deep in the crisis now, and it's hard to see how we're going to get out.
Sure. And quickly, if you can, if you were to give a percentage fault to Truss for the state of the UK economy now, how much of a percentage would you attribute to her?
Okay. I mean, the question is whether the budget, the mini budget on Friday, caused this. Well, you have the same, you know, the euro currency suffered the same slump in value against the dollar, as did the yen, the Japanese yen, the Australian dollar, and the Canadian dollar. And the difference is that the USA has energy security and Europe doesn't, you see. So I don't think it's to do with that. There's a problem with mortgage lenders have started changing all the mortgage products, you know, the mortgages that they offer. They've withdrawn lots of them.
Okay.
Yeah, that's because they offered a lot of fixed rate mortgages, and they don't want to do that anymore because inflation is so high, and this predates the budget, that the Bank of England is going to keep putting up interest rates. So, you know, of course, everybody is going to want to have their mortgage rates fixed for 2 or 3 or 5 years, like they used to be able to. But the mortgage companies, you know, they're like casinos. You know, the house always wins, right? You know, they set it up so the house always wins. Well, they don't want to lose out on that. They're going to pull those products.
Sure.
They pulled a lot of one where you pay a fee, like, say, £1,000 in advance, and you get a slightly lower interest rate. So you're paying your interest up front. But,
okay.
You know, that's based on a certain interest rate, and if the interest rate is going to go up, then, you know, the bank or the mortgage lender loses out. So I don't think it's to do with that budget. You know, the big thing is that the government is spending, it's going to borrow about $60 billion, they say, to pay for to keep people's household bills down.
Okay.
In other words, to subsidize people's gas and electricity bills. So that's increasing government borrowing. And then there was a run on government debt bonds. You know,
very well,
like government bonds.
Sure. Let's bring in Shabir Rizvi in here to get a little bit clearer, Shabir Rizvi, about, or maybe you can tell us why this proposed tax cuts, which, first of all, depending on what publication you're reading, but it seems to be unanimous that it's going to benefit the rich more than the poor, why it has caused this domino effect in different sectors, not different sectors, in different factors that have pulled the UK economy into doldrums, as it's been reported. Perhaps you can explain it to us in layman's terms, of course.
Hello, good evening, Kaveh. It's really interesting times to be commenting as to what's happening to the UK economy. My day job is as a financial advisor, advising clients how to borrow money, how to invest their income, and so on. And it has been really quite a shocking week. It really comes after Mrs. Truss defended her vision for the economy, which has spooked markets and shocked most economists, mainstream economists. So, you know, everyone is really quite intrigued as to the policies that have been implemented. And then, of course, this week saw, yes, there are factors that other currencies have also fallen against the dollar, but this week the pound touched the lowest value ever against the dollar. You know, dollar which was invested 250 years ago, and the Bank of England are so alarmed that they poured billions into the market. Why they did that? Because a lot of money, pension funds, are invested in it, and they didn't want the pension funds to collapse. Interest on government borrowing goes from almost 0% to 5% in weeks. The IMF is also spooked. The Chancellor dare not publish the report of the independent experts. It's expected to be published sometime in October now, and he was sort of pushing it forward for end of November. And what we are told, the mantra we are told, is that don't worry, say both Truss and Kutang. An age of prosperity is just down the road. We've been living for the last 12 years in the age of austerity, where the rich have been getting richer and the poor have been getting poorer. And really, you know, it's really extraordinary. You know, for the last 40 years, the neoliberal economist mantra has been to say that trickle-down economics, meaning that make the rich richer, therefore some money will trickle down to the poor. This is what I like to sort of dub as voodoonomics, not Reaganomics, not Thatcheronomics, not Trussonomics. It's pure voodoonomics. There is no fundamental basis that by reducing 5% tax on the wealthiest would sort of somehow make the poorer better off. It's absolutely sort of outrageous. It has no basis in conventional economic thinking. It's an economy based on ideology.
Well, that's
the Tory Party, as I said, has made rich richer in the last 12 years, and they want to continue to do so for the next 2 years that they're in power.
Well, James Sweeney, that's pretty much what our guest there, Shabir Rizvi, has said, is what many economists agree, and that is that trickle-down economics doesn't work. Of course, it depends on who you're talking to. At the same time, we know that Liz Truss has said, this is not going to make me a popular prime minister, but I'm going to go with it anyways, and she has actually embarked on this and is not going to shy away from it. If she knows that it's not going to work, based on what it has, what economists have said, or other analysts have said, she's very steadfast in going through with it. What do you think the reason for that is, knowing that many have said trickle-down economics doesn't work?
Well, conventional economics, as taught in the West, is voodoo. That's for sure. But it's very strange to see the same people who said that trickle-down economics really does work, laissez-faire economics is great, for decades, and now saying it doesn't, the same people. The Tories have argued, and they can back this up, that cutting corporation tax actually increases tax revenue because you get more investment. Now, whether that's going to keep working, because it has in the past, but whether that's going to keep working in the current crisis, which is not, which is caused by an external factor, then I don't know. You see, you can't tell.
There might be an external factor. We're going to get into that, and I'm going to ask both of you whether that's the case.
I'm going to say, look, in Marxist economics, you need a capitalist to employ people. That's what creates jobs. You need capitalists, bigger capitalists, more capitalists. So yeah, it kind of works, but. What's going on is that, again, all the economists said the free market was sacred, and now we have this immense distortion of the market, of the free market, by putting embargoes and sanctions on Russian oil imports, and now blowing up the pipelines, the oil and gas imports, and now blowing up the gas pipelines. That has, and of course, that distortion has created an economic crisis, because the price of gas has gone up like tenfold in 2 years. So, there's all sorts of things going on here. Look, what's going to happen? She's going to be unpopular, because a lot of the things that were in that budget would be popular with the people who vote Conservative. They're reducing taxes, including on the basic rate of tax for people that most people pay, right? They increase the threshold where you pay stamp duty, which is a tax on buying a house. Many more people will be exempt from that, because the threshold is now $500,000. And all these things, that was all sort of bread and butter stuff. But now what you're going to have, apparently there's a fear that the house price, the house market, the prices of houses will crash. So people who own house, they don't own them, they're paying mortgages, but people with property, the value of their property will fall, and they will be unhappy about
But
the thing is that the house market here is ridiculously overheated to the extent everything is overpriced, people can't afford to buy.
Okay.
It needs to come down, and half of the properties on the market you see now, they're being sold at auction, which means that the only people who can buy them are big landlords who've got that much money in the bank to pay as soon as the auction when the auction is
let's,
out.
Let's move to that external factor that I'd like to ask Shabir Rizvi here, that maybe a reason and a very good reason for Liz Truss to Shabir Rizvi to have introduced this tax cut plan. When she was running to become the prime minister, she during one of the sessions that she was presenting herself to the Friends of Israel, obviously displaying how much she supports Israel in so many ways, but said that the trade deal with Israel needs to be revamped. And she was very quick when she came into office to go ahead with that and finalize that, at the same time making the announcement that she's going to have UK's embassy possibly move from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. Now, it's very interesting that that would be at the top of her list, the trade for a trade treaty to be revamped. Do you think that she's made promises to Israel, as an example, that you're going to get tax cuts, come and invest in the UK, and let's revamp the treaty that we had before? So she has to follow through with these tax cuts for the corporations, for example?
Well, look, you know, the Israel angle is interesting, but I think it's very clear, if you look at it, wherever Israel is participating in economic activity, they really don't invest that much. They want more money to come into Israel for investment, whether it's technology from the, you know, so the Silicon Valley in the USA, or whether it's Indian investment into armament and biotechnology and other areas. So I don't know what benefit that would derive to the UK. But at a broader level, the mantra that is being sort of fed to the public here in UK, as you know very well, is that it's due to Putin that the oil prices has gone up. It's due to Putin that we have high inflation. Food security is being sort of put on the special operation in Ukraine. So everything that is happening to the British economy, the Tory government does not want to take and be honest, saying that they have inflicted austerity for the last 12 years on the British public. And this is an aspect of that austerity, so that the poorer become poorer, and is being sold to the public that, you know, tax is being reduced and so on. You know, 1% reduction in what is called national insurance tax here on, say, someone average salary earning here, 25, 30, 40,000 pounds. That's only £400 per year, that 1%. While the top 1%, 700,000 people in the UK who would benefit by the 5% reduction in income tax, if someone is £100,000, £1 million a year, that's £50,000 extra in their pocket. So again, as I said earlier, the whole concept that if you make rich even richer by way of other instruments, whether it's a reduction in personal taxation, corporation taxation, and other aspects, will make the wider society cheaper. But if I may just continue for 1 minute,
sure.
That, you know, the policy that's being portrayed by Truss and her team and Mr. Kwasi Kwarteng is to make Britain less regulated. But dare I say that for the last 40 years, probably Britain is the most deregulated country in Europe at this moment. I don't know how far deregulation will go. Does it mean that serfdom would come back into the UK like it was in Victorian times? Is that kind of an unregulated market that the Tories want to have in the UK?
Right.
And, you know, ideas are being touted that they want London to be the Singapore on the Thames, unregulated, you know, for the wealthy and the rich, and absolutely regulated for the poor and the disenfranchised.
Sure. Well, I'm not too sure if that's going to work for the UK there, James Tweedy, when you have even the International Monetary Fund coming out. And this was surprising when the IMF comes out and makes a statement saying that what fiscal measures Britain is adopting is actually going to increase inequality, urging UK authorities to reconsider providing more targeted support instead to affected families and businesses. Now, why would the IMF making that statement? First of all, wasn't there inequality in the UK before anyways?
The IMF is responsible for, the continuation of colonial and post-colonial inequalities in the world, so they should know about inequality. It's actually baffling why they're saying that, why the White House is saying that, why the White House is even talking about it like it's their business. I've never heard the U.S. government interfering in Britain's economic affairs before. It all comes back to inflation and the sanctions on Russia. That's not going to change. And yesterday, the shadow defense minister, Labour Party MP for Healey, said that the government will change. He's very sure of that. I'm not so sure. But and the Labour Party will be in power, but the policy towards Ukraine will not change. And he said that anyone who says stop the war is playing into Vladimir Putin's hands. So he's just as militant against Russia and for this war in the Ukraine as Liz Truss is. And so is the Labour Party, you see. So nothing is going to change. In fact, none of the parties in Parliament are proposing a different policy. So the crisis is going to continue. We have this, both the main parties are talking about sort of moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic in order to try and deal with the problem of gas and therefore electricity prices, oil and therefore electricity prices and every other kind of price going through the roof. The conservative way is going to be to borrow money to give to people to pay their bills, but those people will have to pay that money in the future. Through taxation as that debt paid off, probably after the next election. The Labour policy is to put a windfall tax, as they call it, on companies like BP, British Petroleum, that produce the actual gas and oil and are making much bigger profits because of the global market price being very high now. But then they'll pay that money straight back to those companies as a subsidy for people's bills, you see. So those companies will make the same profit twice. And they'll continue to make that profit.
We got 30 seconds left, so I'm going to jump in. I'm sorry, to ask Shabir Rizvi the question. Shabir Rizvi, I was trying to look at the different ways that the UK is spending money. £500 billion, I believe, is what's going to go for the energy issue. You were looking at another £500 million for the Ukraine war. These are just recent acts. And there was another £500 million. I don't know why this 500 is a figure that is repeated, where the UK has promised in another area, which I'm not coming up with that figure right now. But these are big chunks of money. Where is this money coming from that Liz Truss believes that it can just invest in different areas or to allocate in different areas when the economy is doing as bad as it is right now? 30 seconds only.
Well, famously, Theresa May said that we don't have money tree. But the reality is that the government sort of plants new money tree as and when required for their purpose. But when it's sort of, for the National Health Service, for the improvement of the education sector, where students don't have to pay fees for their university degrees,
there's
no money available.
I thank you for that, Shabir Rizvi. I do apologize for jumping in. Political and economic analyst there from London. Thank you, Shabir. Also, journalist and commentator James Sweetie from Plymouth, UK. Thank you so much. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. For me, Kawitawe and the team, it's goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. With the reduction of gas delivery operations through Russia's Nord Stream pipeline to European countries, the fear of a gas shortage in the green continent has intensified. Most European countries and even other countries that are dependent on gas imports are confident that they will face a severe energy crisis this winter. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Turkey's Anadolu News Agency tells us more. According to the International Energy Agency's gas market report for fourth quarter of 2022, published on Monday, 3rd of October, global natural gas markets are set to remain tight next year, with lower gas flow from Russia to Europe, high gas prices, lower demand, and the impact of energy-saving measures. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, said, as Russia's curtailment of natural gas flow to Europe leads to new highs of international prices, it also disrupts trade flow, leading to fuel shortages in some emerging and developing countries. According to the report, Russia's reduced flows to Europe deepens market tensions and uncertainty ahead of the coming winter, not just for Europe, but also for all markets that rely on the same supply pool of liquefied natural gas or LNG. According to the report, the record high prices seen in European and Asian spot LNG markets reduce gas demand and incentivize the switch to other fuels such as coal and oil for power generation. Europe's gas consumption dropped by more than a record 10% during the January to August of this year, compared with the same period in 2021. Driven by a 15% fall in the industrial sector as factories curtailed production. Europe increased liquefied natural gas, LNG imports, as well as alternative pipeline supplies from Norway and elsewhere to offset the sharp falls in Russian gas supplies. Europe's demand for liquefied natural gas, LNG, grew by 65% in the January to August of 2022. Compared to a year earlier. This demand has drawn supply away from the traditional buyers in the Asia-Pacific region, where demand contracted by 7% over the same period due to higher prices, mild weather, and continued COVID-19 lockdowns in China. With the impact of market tightness and high prices, a 0.8% decline in global gas consumption is expected this year, with a record 10% contraction in Europe and unchanged demand in the Asia-Pacific region. Global gas consumption is expected to grow by only 0.4% in 2023. However, The International Energy Agency, the IEA, said in the report the outlook is subject to a high level of uncertainty, particularly in terms of Russia's future actions and the economic impacts of sustained high energy prices. Britain's Financial Times newspaper explains more about the same story. Recently, the head of the International Energy Agency, Fatih Birol, said the scramble for energy resources between the European Union countries this winter could destroy European unity and trigger social unrest. As quoted by the newspaper, Fatih Birol said, "The implications will be very bad for energy, very bad for the economy, but extremely bad politically." According to the newspaper, Birol said the growing energy crisis in Europe raises concerns that some countries may conclude third-party deals for imports of gas from Russia or restrict the export of electricity to their neighbours. In this case, European countries will cease cooperation with each other and everyone will be on their own. Fatih Birol added, "If Europe fails this test in energy, it can go beyond energy implications." In addition, the International Energy Agency head cautioned against the European Union complacency after the European Union managed to accumulate natural gas reserves ahead of this coming winter. According to Birol, even if Europe avoids negative surprises in gas supplies, such as colder than expected winter, it will face other consequences in the coming months, including an economic downturn and significant damage to household budgets. The start of Russia's special operation in Ukraine in February of this year exacerbated the energy crisis unfolding in Europe over the past year. Disruptions in logistical and financial operations due to the conflict and Western sanctions against Russia have undermined supply chains and led to a spike in energy prices worldwide. Moreover, the Reuters news agency has more on this story. The International Energy Agency's forecast that Europe's LNG imports will increase by over 60 billion cubic meters this year, or more than double the amount of global LNG export capacity additions, keep international LNG trade under strong pressure for the short to medium term. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, said in its latest gas market report published on Monday, 3rd of October, it said, "This implies that Asia's LNG imports will remain lower than last year for the rest of 2022. However, China's liquefied natural gas LNG imports could rise next year under a series of new contracts concluded since the beginning of 2021, while a colder-than-average winter would also result in additional demand from Northeast Asia, further adding to market tightness." The International Energy Agency's resilience analysis of the EU's gas market finds that the EU's gas storage will be less than 20% full in February of 2023, assuming a high level of LNG supply in the case of a complete Russian supply shutdown starting from 1st of November 2022. And without demand reductions in place or if Russian pipeline supply is completely cut. Storage levels drop to 5% of full capacity, assuming low LNG supply as storage falling to these levels would increase the risk of supply disruptions in the event of a late cold spell this winter. According to the analysis, a reduction of 9% from the average level of the past 5 years in EU gas demand through the winter months would be necessary to maintain gas storage levels above 25% in the case of lower LNG inflows. A reduction in demand of 13% from the 5-year average will be necessary through the winter period to sustain storage levels above 33% in the case of low LNG inflows. The International Energy Agency, the IEA, warned, therefore, gas-saving measures will be crucial to minimize storage withdrawals and keep inventories at adequate levels until the end of the heating season. The announcement of the emergency is likely to heighten fears of blackouts because the United Kingdom relies on gas-fired power plants for the largest share of its electricity supply.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.